It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kick start it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. And you know what that means? It's time to get nerdy, y'all. It's that time. Welcome to episode number 215 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm joined by my comrade in gaming commentary, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maction. Mac, what's new, man? Been 7 days.
Indeed, it has been 7 days, and honestly, a relatively uninteresting 7 days. It sure was a weekend. I did have one cool thing that's been going on, though, is that I've been getting into cooking a lot more, and my first several attempts at trying to bake bread were not horrible disasters, but, like, you know, they were not good. And I've lately just started to dial it in and started to get some nice, good bread. And
yeah, okay.
There's something real satisfying about getting to the end of a process like that. Bread's this sort of thing where, like, you don't know. You know what I mean? You got to get into it a way with that leaving it to prove and everything before you know how it's going to turn out. And, you know, I'm not making any sense. Point being is that bread, it's not as easy as you might think.
I have an image in my mind of you walking outside with your burnt bread in the rain and throwing it to some young hungry girl, even though you're supposed to be giving it to the pigs. I hope you get that reference.
It's totally cool. Is it like Rigoletto or something?
It's a Hunger Games reference, right? PETA went out and he threw the burned bread to Katniss Everdeen.
Oh, I love PETA bread. It's fantastic.
No, PETA Malark, dude. PETA Malark is the character from Hunger Games.
Oh, wow. Is he?
This could not be scripted to be any funnier than it actually is with all these misunderstandings. Let's move on. And you cannot edit this out.
I won't. I promise.
Ladies and gentlemen, my week was pretty boring too. No, you know what? I won't say that because I did have my birthday this past weekend. So that was dope.
Beep, 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 beep.
But I did have COVID on my birthday. And so that was rough. But here's the thing. I'm not 9 years old. So, you know, it was fine. It just meant that I had to stay in the house and relax, which was great. And there was only one thing I wanted for my birthday. I wanted Ready Player 2. I'm a simple guy. And my wife got me Ready Player 2, and I've been enjoying Ready Player 2. Spoiler alert for what we've been watching and what we've been playing. And that was my weekend. My wife took good care of me. We had great food. We hung out at the house, watched some movies, played some games. Kids got me playing board games all weekend. It was great. It was phenomenal. I am a happy dude in his 30s. Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, man. What do you think about that?
Let's do it. What cool and interesting things have been happening, Mr. Nice Guy?
Dude, there's been a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thanks for tuning in to episode 215. It is time for that news. Mac, let's talk MMOs, man, and let's talk back a little bit about Microsoft having just purchased Activision Blizzard for a lot of money. This is an article on IGN.com written by Luke Winkie. I just want to give him credit for this topic. I'm not going to read much, if any, of the article. But it's titled World of Warcraft on Console Feels Closer Than Ever Before. Now, he goes on, Mac, to outline the fact that Microsoft has just purchased Activision Blizzard. As we know, Activision Blizzard does the Warcraft games. They do Diablo. They do Overwatch. They do a lot of stuff. But World of Warcraft is a behemoth. It's been around a long time. It's an MMO. People are saying they'd like to see it on console. Number one, have you ever played World of Warcraft on PC? Has it ever been of interest to you? I'm curious about that.
So Warcraft 1 and 2, yes.
Not Warcraft, but World of Warcraft.
No, unfortunately. And the reason being is that I discovered that if I play a game of a certain style, that it will suck me in and, like, I'll leave everything by the wayside. And I've always been too worried that World of Warcraft was going to be one of those games to ever try it myself.
So let me ask you this, like, why? You're a grown man. You're a responsible adult.
Yes, I'm a grown man.
Saying it makes it true, right?
I'm almost a full grown man.
No, you're legitimately like an adult with responsibilities. You have a lovely wife. Like, you're super responsible. You have a lot going for you. I cannot believe that you would get sucked into a video game at this stage of your life, like to the point of it getting in the way of life. Do you still feel that way, or is that why you didn't get into it 15 years ago?
Well, that is why I didn't get into it 15 years ago, but also, like, you know, I'm not just saying this as a hypothetical. Like, I want to say that, like, as recently as maybe a week ago, like, and it wasn't a video game, but, like, you know, I went down some rabbit holes that, like, just sucked every bit of my time that I really should have been pointing towards some productive stuff. So, okay, I mean, like, okay. I'm still not immune to it to this day. So, like, I've got to be careful. I mean, now, more power to anybody who can engage in these things and not have it suck everything. But, like, I'm still, and that's the thing. I'm an adult, and I think my real adult, you know, what am I doing as an adult is just really, like, recognizing, hey, I've got a weakness for that, so I'm going to stay away. And that's just me.
Okay, fair. And I respect that. It's interesting. It's interesting the direction that this conversation went, because the reason I was asking is I was curious if you just didn't get into it because you have to sit in front of your PC. I was going to say, with the Steam Deck coming out and with it potentially being on consoles, would you consider getting into this game? Because for me, that's what's really stopped me from getting into it. I have it on my PC. I have the demo. I've played it a couple hours. But I feel like if it was on console, and number one, it would just be easier because it's controlling, right? I'm more used to using a controller. But number two, it's been around for, what, 15, 20 years, World of Warcraft? If they move it to PC, it is going to bring in a whole new audience of noobs like me, right? And so that's why I was curious if a new community would make you get into it, but I feel like you've already answered that question.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sorry. I think, though, if I imagine myself as being me, but without that little hesitancy there, then heck yeah, being able to play it on the Steam Deck would probably open up a lot of new and terrifying vistas.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I can't help but think that if it comes to console, then it may be an inferior version, but I think it's going to rejuvenate that game. Like, I hear that it's kind of hit a couple bumps in terms of the amount of content that's coming out and in terms of the quality of content. But I mean, if you put 15 years of content onto console, because at this point, all of the game is free, is my understanding, it's going to bring in a lot of people who were hesitant to play it before. Either one, because they could not afford a gaming PC, a proper gaming PC powerful enough, or two, because they just didn't want to jump into something 15 years old and be the new guy on the block or new girl on the block. So I hope this comes to PC. It's something I would like to get into, and I hope I have the self-control to not let it. Let's move on to another news story. There's some Steam Deck stuff. It's not that interesting, though. Let's talk about Discord. Because, Mac, I don't know if you remember, we talked about several months ago, I think, about PlayStation and Discord forming a partnership. And it is official now. This is on GameInformer.com by John Carson. Announced back in May of last year. So actually, this was a long time ago we talked about this. Sony and Discord formed a partnership to bring the PlayStation and Discord ecosystems together. Today, as of January 31st, we're finally seeing some movement in bringing Discord integration to Sony's consoles, or rather, the other way around. As of today, you can now link your PlayStation account to your Discord ID. This lets your friends or other server mutuals see when and what you're playing on PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5. The service works like any other, such as Steam, Blizzard, Xbox, Spotify, etc. The setup is the same as well. And it talks about how to connect it. Now, I don't know if this is doing anything other than allowing people to see what you're playing, but I believe I read somewhere, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, chat, I believe I read that you can now chat through this as well, which to me is a big deal. I don't know if you read anything about that, Mac, but if that's true, I think that's a game changer. Would you agree? Be able to be on PlayStation but chat with people on Discord?
Yeah, that would be nice. I think that's one of the things that people really enjoy about console gaming now. And as a member of the PC Brigade, as you know, we've had this sort of thing for a while, but it does add a lot to video games when you can have chat while you're playing. And Discord integration is nice, and I'm happy that more people have it, especially PlayStation people getting it.
And I'm reading about this, and I may be incorrect, because first of all, it does allow integration in terms of people seeing what you're playing. I don't know if it has voice chat. It's making it sound like maybe it doesn't have that yet. I think that would be a much needed step. I can tell you right now, there's a group of comedians I play Halo with on Xbox, and there's some of them that are on PC. And whenever we're playing, we are not allowed to use party chat because we got some people on PC, so we use Discord.
So I have to know, your comedian Halo group, what is your band name or group name or squad name?
We don't have a squad name.
Oh, well, but we should come up with a squad name for you.
But the name of the Discord is, and I don't know what this means, the Picado Security Forces. I don't know if it's a movie reference or what. But it's a little Discord. We have a group of comedians across the country that I've performed with in virtual reality.
Well, we need to come up with a Halo, with a Spartan group name for you guys. I will take this responsibility upon myself.
Yeah, but it's annoying, man, because, you know, we can't do voice chat unless we're through Discord. So I'm like over on the couch playing Halo, and then I have my phone with Discord pulled up. They need to get it, integrated into consoles. That would be dope. And I thought that's what it was saying about PlayStation, but I was incorrect about that. Anyway, we got other news stories. Let's keep it moving. Mac, we've talked about Arcade 1-Up before.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of come around on Arcade 1-Up. Like, I'm kind of a purist. Like, if you're going to have an arcade that's not a MAME, I feel like you should have the original. But this is a pretty good deal they got going on here at Best Buy. This is by John Bittner on GameSpot.com. Best Buy is currently offering up to $150 off select arcade one-ups, including the sale. You'll find the ping pong table, rather the Pong Pub table, X-Men 4-player arcade, and Mortal Kombat/Midway gaming table. Mac, these things are expensive. Like, I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Like, you've seen how much they cost. Is $150 off these a good deal, or is that still a ripoff? To give you some perspective, Turtles in Time, normally $700, now down to $550. Simpsons, normally $700, now down to $600. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, let's see. Aren't they something like 3/4 the size of an original?
They are. Yeah, they are. They're not full size.
You know, I don't know. I don't know as I've come around on the arcade one-ups. But I will say that I feel like a decrease in price is still good. For a 3/4 machine, is that enough? I just don't know. I think that it's probably pretty good. Like, I just shot from the hip. My guess is that the legit arcades, number one, I don't think they're making them anymore, so obviously that's going to make them more expensive. And number two, I doubt you would find good conditions for anything close. So even though to me, I think I'm looking at it with a little bit of sticker shock, and I'm like, oh man, that's a lot of money for me to not just do a MAME or something. But, I mean, what other options do you have? And for people who have that kind of disposable income at their fingertips, I mean, $150 off is $150 off.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like people who would be into this would just Raspberry Pi it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know I would.
Yeah, that to me, that's what I would do. That would make the most sense, but to each their own. One last news story, and then we will move on. Let's talk about the Steam Deck, dude. And it's like a cool new feature they're going to be adding. This one is on IGN.com by Kat Bailey. Steam Deck games, this is written today. Steam Deck games could eventually look a lot better. And you'll have to explain what this means to me, Mac. Thanks to its support for Fidelity FX Super Resolution, also known as FSR. AMD's DLSS competitor that has the ability to enhance frame rates and resolution. Steam Deck's FSR support is detailed in the platform's partner FAQ, which contains info on inputs, graphics, and other questions, blah, blah, blah. Here's what it says. It says FSR is already available for some applications that support it. Games that already include FSR will work as is, but also FSR support will be included as part of the OS future release, Valve's FAQ says. Once that happens, games could potentially make use of FSR, even if the games themselves do not natively support it. So it sounds to me, and I don't know a lot about this type of stuff, and if you don't either, that's cool, but it sounds to me like this is kind of like how if you don't have a 4K Or rather, if you have like a 4K TV, but you have a console that doesn't play in 4K, you can get it to upscale.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that's what FSR is, except for PC stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it winds up, it winds up doing that sort of upscaling, helping with things like ray tracing and the like. I'm not exactly sure how it works. I'm afraid that that the scaling that they're using is just a little bit beyond me with respect to, you know, me not having really heard much about it before.
Yeah, man, and I don't know. Like, to me, the Steam Deck, I'm not getting it for graphics. I mean, I'm getting it for convenience. Right?
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's you know, lay in bed, it's sit somewhere on the couch and play a game with my friends, right? Honestly, I kind of might get into World of Warcraft on the Steam Deck. I'm not gonna lie. But it's not about, oh, these graphics look so cool. Like, it's more just about playing my Steam library, playing my Xbox games that are on Xbox Game Pass that way. So, Mac, that's been our news for the week. But one other thing I will share really quickly, since we're a little bit ahead of time, and I think this will be exciting to you, a bonus news story from GameInformer.com is that Mina the Hollower is Shovel Knight Studio Yacht Club Games' next project. And the pictures of this look very much like a Maction game. To me, anything that comes from the Shovel Knight Studio Yacht Club Games is probably going to be good. So I will be keeping an eye on this. And if you don't have any comments on that...
Yes, I believe they described it as something like Castlevania meets Legend of Zelda, right?
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, oh man, if Mr. Nice Guy doesn't say this, I will. But I'm so glad. You did not disappoint.
Yeah, the pictures look really good. And I would say the pictures look just like how you described it. A hybrid of those two games. So... this will be a Steam Deck game to play when it comes out. I'm excited, dude. And that has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now we're going to turn to a little bit of video game history. What happened this week in years before? And we pay tribute to a few video games. Oh, man. I'll start at the top with the 1998 release for the PlayStation 1. Final Fantasy Tactics. You knew it was coming. It's one of my favorite games of all time. The graphics, the storyline, everything. It is noteworthy that, George R.R. Martin would publish his first Game of Thrones book something like a few months, I think, before Final Fantasy Tactics came out. Maybe even a little bit longer, but not that much in advance of Final Fantasy Tactics. But I've always found Final Fantasy Tactics' story to be, you know, in my opinion, better than Martin's, and certainly better than the television series. But that's all I'll say about Final Fantasy Tactics right now. Fantastic stuff. Absolutely love it. Instead, let's focus a little bit on some other titles, like the 1996 release on PC of Duke Nukem 3D. Now, what we celebrate today, my good friends, is the shareware release that happened.
Ah, okay, I remember shareware.
Yeah, right? You would get some amount of the game for free, and then you pay the company, and they'd send out some stuff. A few months after, so, you know, probably like May or so, the 1.3 version of Duke Nukem 3D was released and got sent out to people, and a few months later than that, there was the 1.4 release, adding even more levels onto the end of the game. So now, obviously, Mr. Nice Guy, when you think of the origin of the FPS genre, would it be fair to say that you think Duke Nukem, Wolfenstein, and Doom, probably in no particular order?
Like, in terms of being the most iconic?
Yeah, of being the origin of the genre.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I probably think Doom first.
Probably Doom first. And while none of those three that we said are, like, the actual origin, like, there were first-person shooters, there was that stuff before, they are definitely incredibly influential, and not surprisingly, all from id. And since they all relied on the same kind of madhouse technology, I wanted to mention it. I know I've said it before, but it is super cool. So super cool, in fact, that it's still sort of in use in what we use today. Like, Mr. Nice Guy, you've heard of ray tracing, right? Yeah. Sorry to put you on the spot, but what do you know about ray tracing?
It just makes the graphics look better, man. That's all I know. Yeah. I'm not really a videophile, but apparently it just makes things look a little bit more smoother as you're playing really, really high fidelity games.
Yeah, and it's kind of all the rage. Like, you know, like if we go back, like, I don't know, a year or so, like we were hearing lots of stuff about ray tracing. Ray tracing, right. All about ray tracing. And still to some extent, but it's just not quite the same buzzword. Well, these early FPSs made use of something called ray casting, which is the predecessor to ray tracing. The concepts that we're using now are rooted back here in these early first-person shooters. And I'll just steal this line from Wikipedia, which I've made some quick clarification edits, because this does a better job describing it than really I ever could. The idea behind ray casting, the predecessor to recursive ray tracing, is to trace rays from the eye, one per pixel, and find the closest object blocking the path of that ray. If you think of an image as a screen door, with each square in the screen as being a pixel, then this is the object the eye sees through that pixel. Using the material properties and the effect of the lights in the scene, this algorithm can determine the shading of the object. This simplifying assumption is made that if a surface faces a light, the light will reach that surface and not be blocked or in shadow. The shading of the surface is computed using traditional 3D computer graphics shading models. One important advantage ray casting offered over older scan-like algorithms was its ability to easily deal with non-planar surfaces and solids, such as cones and squares. This allows elaborate objects to be easily rendered. So, you know, I'm just thinking about it. Most of that probably could have cut most of it.
I did great.
But basically, the idea being is that the ray casting allowed for them to take these objects that otherwise would be complex geometries for them to make use of in older computer stuff, and to be able to draw them without, taxing the computer hardware quite so much. But very topical, since after all we were talking about the ray tracing from the AMD, what was it, FSD or FS what have you, just a minute ago. Alright, last one I wanted to point out is release in 1999 for the PS1, and that would be the first Silent Hill game. Mr. Nice Guy, that game have any, any stuff, any important things for you?
Honestly, dude, you put me on the spot, and I'm not going to be able to hit the home run this time, because I'm not that super familiar with Silent Hill. I'm not really a horror game guy other than The Last of Us.
Yeah, no, that's all good, man. I'm not much of a horror guy either. But I think one of the things that's kind of fun about Silent Hill is sort of the idea of a show Bible. Have you ever heard of that idea before, a show Bible?
I have not, man. Tell me about it.
So the idea is that if you're going to make something, right, let's say you're going to start like a series or whatever, and the idea is that you would have a set of underlying assumptions or similar ideas and themes to kind of connect them. It's a very popular thing in like television shows or movies or what have you. Like I've seen a couple show Bibles, as it were, like for the Avatar The Last Airbender, you can find the show Bible for that one. Well, as I was trying to look for some interesting things to present about, Silent Hill that maybe you might not know about, there was a, when Silent Hill 3 was released in the early aughts, they produced just such a thing called the Book of Lost Memories. I can neither confirm nor deny as to its completeness, as I've not been a diehard Silent Hiller, and I've seen some people argue that the book itself was kind of like a retconning of the universe with the release of the book, so, like, I don't know for sure. However, one of the core ideas in the Silent Hill franchise that was made very clear in that series Bible, if in fact that was indeed a true series Bible, was that the franchise was not just to make, like, the monsters, not just, like, scary things, but things that told you about the characters themselves. The very monsters were meant to be a delivery vehicle for some amount of exposition as to who the character was or what the character was worried about. The shapes of the monsters represented the fears of the characters. And while it's not an entirely new as a concept and was a common practice like in movies and the like, it's one of the earlier, might have been the earliest, and definitely within its series, one of the really effective implementations in video games of trying to make everything in the show, or in this case, in the video game, be a reflection of the characters that you interact with. And while I don't know much about horror as a genre, and I don't know too much about all of the horror games out there, I do know that Silent Hill is well-loved and respected for its monsters. And that's what made it so good.
Dude, great synopsis in it. Appreciate that.
Thanks. Well, that's been history.
And that means we can do our topic of the week, Mac. So let's get to it. This is the part of the show where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. And this is the biggest news story of the week. You know, either last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about Activision being purchased by Microsoft. Here on GameInformer.com, we have a news story by Marcus Stewart. Sony Interactive Entertainment has announced it is purchasing Bungie for $3.6 billion. That means the studio that created Halo and Destiny is coming under the PlayStation umbrella. Sony's announcement caps off an acquisition-heavy January that saw Take-Two buy Zynga for $13 billion, and Microsoft announced plans to buy Activision Blizzard for $68.7 billion. I'm not going to read too much of the article, Mac. We know what this means. You know, are we at the point where it's just a race to see who can acquire the most companies? Because to give you one more big piece of context, Sony said that Sony said that Destiny is not going to become a console exclusive. It will still be a multiplat game. Microsoft said the same thing about Call of Duty. They said, even though we're buying Activision, we're going to allow it to be on those other consoles. And I can't believe for a minute that these companies are buying these companies without some type of profit. So is it just a race at this point? Or, like, what's the motive if they're going to stay multiplat with all the games?
Gosh, I wish I knew. On the one hand, it is easy to make promises and not deliver on them. It's very easy, right? We see it all the time. Make a promise, oh, this is going to be good, or this is going to be a multi-platform, and then it doesn't wind up being that, oh, well. What you gonna do about it? Because you want to still enjoy your favorite IP, right? And so I hear them saying that, and maybe, but Sony's always been known for the exclusives, right? You buy the PlayStation so that you can play those incredible exclusive titles. You can't really say the same for Xbox. I don't feel like you could say the same for Xbox in a lot of ways. But sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, so you're right. I'd agree with you. And the interesting thing is, it's not like Microsoft bought up Sony exclusives. They didn't buy Uncharted or Ratchet & Clank or what else? The Last of Us or any of those, right? Or any of that. But they bought other stuff that was multiplat. And they're saying, you know, rather than us creating our own exclusives, we're going to buy stuff and then say that it can stay multiplat. But who knows? Maybe they're going to say the Xbox version is way better than the PlayStation version. And now maybe Sony's going to do that with Destiny. They're going to let it stay multiplat, but they're going to make the PlayStation version better.
I mean, it's not too frightfully difficult to optimize something for one platform over another, especially when on the Microsoft, on the Xbox and computer thing, there's so much architecture that is very similar there, whereas on the Sony side of things, it could very much potentially be different. It reminds me of, like, the Sega Dreamcast, right? It didn't last for too frightfully long, but it was hard to program for, in spite of it having having like two processors. That's part of what made it hard to program for, but when you programmed specifically for it, stuff worked really well within the context of the game, you know, of the game sphere of what was available at the time, right? So it's not hard to imagine a situation wherein, yeah, that game might be, you know, just to play into exactly what you're saying, Mr. Nice Guy, it's not hard to imagine that scenario where it could be that way.
Yeah. We're going to read these viewer comments in just a second because I'm really excited to see what people have to say. But here's the thing I will say about this that's different than the Activision acquisition by Microsoft. This involves an MMO. And so, I mean, you could say that people have been playing Activision games for years, right? They've been playing Call of Duty for years on PlayStation. They've been playing Elder Scrolls for years on PlayStation. But I can't think of any game other than a PC game like World of Warcraft that Microsoft now owns that's an MMO. However, by purchasing Destiny, a game that people have played for years on Xbox, and potentially it being a PlayStation exclusive at some point, you may lose your Xbox character's progress if they don't allow you to move it over. You know, you lose the friends who play on Xbox and don't want to move over to PlayStation. Like, it's an MMO. It's meant to be an ongoing thing for a very, very long time. And so I think the purchase of Destiny has the potential to frustrate a lot of gamers if Sony does decide to take their ball and run away. So it'll be interesting to see. Mac, any comments in the chat we want to read before we wrap this up?
Let me hit Galvatron's. Online people think that Sony bought Bungie as a counter move. Galvatron finds that to be unlikely. Large mergers and acquisitions take months or years to finalize. The announcement may be timed, but the acquisition will not be. And that's definitely true. Even that Activision Blizzard merger or, you know, purchase is not slated to close until, I think, middle of the year 2023 by their sort of best estimates.
Yeah, that's correct.
So, yes, we hear about this today, but stuff has been in the works for a long time before, as they've been talking about it, as well as, you know, will still be in the works for a long time as well. Let's see, this is just the beginning. Consolidation will expand and continue. Sony announcing that Destiny will stay on Xbox is evidence that they are nowhere close to building their own walled off cloud computing offering. If they were, they would be building a third party catalog of exclusive games right now. Yeah, that could be. And that was all from Galvatron, by the way. Any that you want to read out?
Let's see. Now, did you read you didn't read this one from Spenis yet, did you?
No.
Sony may be thinking of the purchase of Bungie being for more than just Destiny. It could be a product completely separate from an already established IP. Now, that's true, because I can't believe that Bungie is only going to work on Destiny, that they're not going to work on other stuff. You know, there's a lot of profitability to be made from Destiny. And I think that that's probably their main thing, because we know a Destiny 3 is coming, right? We know that it's going to go on for a long time. But you're right. I don't think that Bungie is going to forever just support one game and make one game. It could be that Sony knows something that we don't, and that they're excited for that. So,
yeah. Cool.
That's what I've had, Mac. Anything else you want to say on this topic before we wrap it up?
Sad to see it, but it seems inevitable. Here's to hoping it doesn't go through. I'd like to see my companies smaller and not all owned by the same parent company.
We'll see what happens. Nintendo is going to buy somebody next. That has been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here, or whether it should be kickstarted. We call this Kicker Kickstart. I've posted a link in the chat, and Mr. Nice Guy, I'm kind of excited about this one. It is called Apollo, a co-op game. That's the title. It's an asymmetrical multiplayer game, right? And what it is it's meant to be a sort of putting you in the position of Apollo crew members. So player one is going to be on whether the shuttle from Apollo 11 or the lander from Apollo 12 or, of course, the fated Apollo 13. And the rest of the players, if you have additional players to hop in on this, are going to be playing people at, like, Mission Control down in, I guess that would have been Texas, right? Yeah, Mission Control's Texas, because it's Houston, we have a problem. Yeah, that's one. But this is one of the things that's super cool about it and just hits me right where I live, is that one of the things that you can find from NASA is you can find lots of high-fidelity scanned images, documents, all those pictures that you're seeing from, like, James Webb Telescope or from other things like that. Those you can, you can go online, you can get those photos, you can have them, you can use them. But also, same with these documents. So you, as a person down at Mission Control, presumably are going to have the same build schematics and documents that, like, they would have in the Mission Control when they're trying to walk you through doing stuff. It has a sort of, what are some of those games? Like Keep Talking and Nobody Dies.
Nobody Explodes.
Yeah, Nobody yeah. Explodes. It has that sort of frantic feel to it, as some of them are things. They mention Apollo 11, 12, and 13, I think Apollo 12 got struck by lightning a few times and they had to do a computer reset during it. One of the other Apollos, they had to take in the landers manually because the computers malfunctioned. And it's an interesting thought experiment. They're saying that they're going to have these options for you to play other missions. Other mission objectives that could have been done but didn't actually happen. Things that were on the list but didn't actually do it. The disasters that actually happened. What would you play? What would you choose? How would you go about these with the materials and such? And, they are looking for... It's a $14 minimum buy-in for a copy of the game. You can pay like $50 to get 5 copies of the game if you like, one for you and 4 for others. They're looking at delivery in 1 year, February of 2023. They're about 5,000 out of 40,000 of their goal of this. Actually, let me refresh because it might have changed since then. But about 22 days left to go, and I like it. And it has a playable demo, Mr. Nice Guy. It has a playable demo.
Wow. So I didn't catch, I don't know if you said this because I was scanning it, but it's not VR, is it?
No, not that I'm aware. It seems like it could work for a VR title, though.
Yeah. And that doesn't make a difference in my decision. I was just curious because the videos very much look like it could be VR or PC, right? Or flat screen. So I like this, dude. I really, really like the concept of it. You know, we have enough games where we're doing the same type of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something different. I mean, it's not like so vastly different that it's out there and it's ridiculous and unfathomable how it could ever be good. This is something like, hey, this is just a different style of game. It's co-op. You're in outer space. It's a simulation type game. And I don't hate it. I'm not super excited, but I like the idea.
Well, I am a big fan of space. And seeing space another way, I think the missus and I, we actually wound up playing, what was the name of the game? I think it was called Moonbase Alpha back in the day. We tried and played that together and had an absolute laugh riot of a good time. And I see this as very much being another opportunity, another option, another way to kind of get our space game on. Because you can take away my spaceship. You can take away my space lasers. But you can never take away my space game. Shout out to MC Lars. Are you not familiar with that song?
I know who MC Lars is, but I don't know that song. I referenced Hunger Game earlier, so you had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. So we're MC even. Lars space game. That's all I'm saying. So, I think it's fair. I think you can tell where I'm going with this, Mr. Nice Guy. But I certainly think that this is a kickstart of a game. I think it's good. I like it. So far from what I can see, things are good. And it comes with a playable demo. It doesn't ask for money until it has something to prove, something that it can prove. And that always sits well with me.
So you're, wait, you said, what was your vote?
Kickstart.
Dude, I'm so on the fence. I'm so on the fence, Mac. I think the price point is good, $14. Like, they're not asking for too much money. 2023 February delivery, I think that's dope. I think that's realistic. They got a team on here of people that are doxxed and look like they all have baby faces, but that's okay. They look like they know what they're doing. There's a certain light in their eyes.
Yeah, it started out as a student project. So these are people who've been working together in school to put it. And you know what? I think this demo is the result of their work. And
here's what I like. They got some advisors. They got some advisors. They got Tracy Fullerton. I don't know who that is, but they got Dr. Ken Phillips. I also don't know who that is. But they got some advisors, right? Probably started out, like you said, as a student project. Now they got advisors helping them through, talking them through, mentoring them. I like this. How could I vote against this? I vote to kickstart.
Excellent. And let us know what you think. Already, Spenis is on board, but we want to hear from you as well. So that's been Kicker Kickstart. We wish them all the best, and here's to hoping that they can go the distance.
Put it in VR after release.
After release. And that's been Kicker Kickstart.
Nice. Well, now it is time for Nerdflex.
Oh, woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. But before we do, Mac has something to say.
Indeed, this is a sound test episode, which means I am about to play a sound, a mystery sound, from somehow, somewhere, somewhen. In video games, your task is to correctly identify it and to let us know on Twitter at Two Nerds in a Pod where it comes from. The first one to correctly identify it will receive a nerdy present from us. So, ears open, best of luck. All right, well, good luck. And if this one proves to be too challenging, don't forget that we do this once a month. So just skim back every fourth episode and you will find another sound test. Maybe you can get lucky on one of those. Back to you, Mr. Nice Guy, and our test bank.
Sounds good, radio host from the 30s. We are ready for our sound test. For our Nerdflex. If you're here live, you have a job to do. Put those multiple choice gaming related questions in the chat. Also, since we're a little short on people today, we get it. People are watching the Nets play the Suns right now. I get it. We're going to have a test bank question from our test bank of random questions to get things started. But if you're here live, get those questions in. Mac, here's the first question. This one is interesting. I do not know the answer. Which Mario game has worlds based on places known for conspiracy theories? Which Mario, right? I've never heard of this theory before. Which Mario game has worlds based on places known for conspiracy theories? I'm excited to know what the answer is, but let's talk through it.
We're gonna have to talk through it. Okay, so Mario games that had worlds. I mean, I guess that would mean named worlds, right? So we can't do Mario's 1 and 2.
Right, but Mario 3 did.
Yeah, Super Mario World, did that have named worlds in it? Yeah, it did, okay.
Yeah, because there was like Donut Plains.
Yeah, Donut Plains, Haunted World, Haunted Woods.
I'm going to guess that that's not it. I hate to like, I don't know if it's cheating, but like when did we put this test bank together?
I put it together a couple years ago, so
I'm trying to think if it was before or after Mario Odyssey. Because Mario Odyssey, I can't even remember the world's names, but it has like more like real world type of feel.
Yeah, there's like a moon thing, and so yes. You know, conspiracy theories about the moon. There's a Metropolis. I guess it could be Super Mario Odyssey.
Because Mario 3, the worlds are just like Little Big World or like the desert world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I feel like it would have to be a Mario game that's more recent.
Yeah.
And Mario Galaxy, those are all just straight up outer space. So I lean towards Mario Odyssey.
Okay, and I lean more towards Super Mario World, the one for the Super Nintendo. And because, Mr. Nice Guy, this isn't a multiple choice, you and I, we don't have to guess the same.
That is true. So I'm going to guess Mario Odyssey final answer.
And I'll guess Super Mario World final answer.
Oh my gosh. Okay, and this should have been obvious now that I think about it. So it's actually Super Mario Land.
Huh.
And if you think about it, Super Mario Land has like Egyptian.
Yeah, it's got the pyramids.
Yeah. I never would have thought of Mario Land. I can't even think of the names of the worlds.
Yeah, me but neither.
I remember there's like a bunch of hieroglyphics and stuff like that. And yeah. So anyway, okay, we got it wrong. Fair. People are being shy in the chat today, and that is totally cool. We're going to keep going with questions. Oh, we got one. Would you read that for us, Matt? Would you do the honors?
Spenis asks, in Super Mario Sunshine, which course features the debut of P.D. Piranha? Is it Pinata Village, Rico Harbor, Bianco Hills, or Pina Park? Pina Park. Pina Park. Yeah. Anyway, I've never played Super Mario Sunshine, so I have no idea.
I mean, my first instinct, right? Because it's a piranha. P.D. Piranha. Although, wait. I think it's actually a piranha fish. So I lean towards Rico Harbor, because that sounds like there's water, right?
Yeah, that does sound like it.
I'm going to go with Rico Harbor, dude. I don't know if you have any different thoughts.
I have not the foggiest idea, so I'm going to go with you on Rico Harbor.
All right, we might be 0 for 2, and that'll be okay. Go ahead, Spenis. Let us know the answer in the chat. And A.R. Wilson, you said you have a question. Feel free to get it in the chat.
See? Man, the anticipation always kills me. Every time.
That little delay between Twitch.
So, the answer is, it is Bianco Hills, the first major course in the game, and you face him twice in the level. Rico Harbor actually had a giant blooper as a boss fight.
So, I'm going to get another question. Here's another question. Nintendo. Adventure Time's BMO looks like which Nintendo console?
I actually know this.
Do you really? Dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
right, what is it?
I'm pretty sure it's meant to look like a Game Boy.
Okay. Adventure Time, that's the one. I'm just going to take your word for it so we can move on. Let's take Mac's word for it, Game Boy final answer. And he was right. It's the Game Boy. 1 for 3 because Mac is good at this stuff, and I am not.
No, we're a team. Dude, the number of times where you have carried me on Nerdflex is not... It's a greater than zero number.
It's greater than zero. Fantastic. That is
I'm trying to be... okay, yep. That's what I can say with confidence. All right, let's talk a little bit of legalese. All right, well, what I've got for you today is kind of a sad one. It's called Roblox v. Simon. So, if the claim of Roblox at all is to be believed, this Simon fella is a bad dude, Mr. Nice Guy. He's 24 years old, and he should know better. This is definitely one of those things that if it was still pre-episode 100, or whenever we changed over to doing Nerdflex, which I think was around episode 100, if we were still doing Dummy of the Week, this would get you Dummy of the Week. So he spent a large amount of time harassing people on the Roblox platform. Like, you know, other people, right?
This dude is 24 years old.
He's harassing other people. And then when he gets banned, he starts turning his ire toward the makers of the game and the community managers as well. And Mr. Nice Guy, we try and keep this show appropriate for all ages.
We sure do.
And in order to do that, I will just say, when I say harass, just use your imagination. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, you used your imagination, Mr. Nice Guy?
I used it.
You thought up, the answer is yes, and it gets worse, right? So,
We gotta Google this.
And here's where it gets worse. So the mods are trying to like do their job and boot Simon from the platform, right? But he keeps on making new accounts to circumvent his ban and making videos bragging about it as he does, right? Here's that dummy of the week part. Only to keep on doing those things that you thought up just a minute ago. And remember how I mentioned it got worse? Yeah, then he went on to do a modified SWAT of the 2021 Roblox Developer Conference, which, in spite of it being called like a developer conference, it's just one platform, one game. So it was just like employees, right? So anyway, at the end of the day, in Roblox v. Simon, right, the charges are computer fraud, data access fraud, breach of contract, and some other things in there, and tortious interference is like a you're trying to ruin somebody's business kind of thing. That's the fancy pants word for it, is tortious interference. Well, the judgment came down recently on this. Simon had basically no defense and was pretty much dead to rights on all counts. He has to pay $150,000 in damages and has to knock it off. Here's to hoping he can manage that, but that seems a little bit of an adult thing. And I don't know. I don't know if he's got it in him.
The reason I was laughing is because I Googled what he did.
Yeah.
And first of all, most of it, like, it's really not funny. Like, yeah. Most of it, it's not. But I just was laughing because the article says prolific profanity.
Yeah, right?
Like, there's a whole nother level. It was so bad they had to say it was prolific. That just made me giggle. I don't know why. Don't act like this, guys.
No, not at all. Video games, look, guys, this is... You know what we really love about video games is the amazing kind of relationships that you can make, the community that you can build and grow and be a part of. And, you know, life's too short for that kind of nonsense. So be like Mr. Nice Guy. Don't be like Simon.
We have one last segment before we go called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about cool, nerdy stuff we've been into. Mac, would you do the honors? And chat, if you're here live, let us know what you've been into. Mac, what you up to?
Absolutely. So lately, I've been watching... I watched a... oh, gosh. As soon as you ask, then it's out the window. I watched that Legend of Vox Machina that came out on Amazon.
How was it?
It is trying to be violent and crass, and it succeeds. They said that they went with Amazon for the hosting of the, you know, of the show, because they're the only place that was just like, yeah, that sounds good. We'll let you do an R-rated cartoon. And
well,
and it 100% is. I mean, and I don't know if that's necessarily 100%. Like, maybe Netflix would have let them do an R-rated. I mean, after all, Castlevania, right? But I will say that it doesn't get quite as violent as Castlevania. But it certainly is, you know, sort of in that vein. It's got the people who did Dragon Prince. They did at least some of the animation, same animation studio. So, like, you can definitely feel some of the influence there. And apart from that, let's see. Man, what else have I been watching? I feel like that's all the new stuff. I've also been watching some of the old, you know, going through Angel Season 3. And have been watching a bit of Haven Season 4. Again, not a good show. But, you know...
a good show.
So I originally got into Haven because, like, I've got a friend. My wife and I, we've got this mutual friend who's obsessed with it. And so we're like, okay, we'll watch it so that we know what you're talking about, so that we can chat about it, right? And then at one point we're like, okay, this is not... well written. This is not a good show.
Yep.
And they were like, oh, no. I did not say it was a good show. I just said I was obsessed with it. And so now in for a penny, in for a pound. So that's what I've been watching. As for what I've been playing, I've finally started playing Shadow of the Colossus. And I will give you more details next week. Promise.
So you won't even tell us what you think of it. So.
It's too early. It's okay. Too early.
I won't tell you my thoughts either.
Okay.
Until we talk next week.
Deal.
Okay. So, what have I been playing this week? I've been playing a little bit of Nobody Saves the World by Drink Fox. That's a great little game. I think it'll be mentioned in the Game of the Year conversation. I do not think it will win. But it's cool. Maybe Indie Game of the Year. I've been playing a lot of Halo. Now, keep in mind, I had COVID, so I was in bed. And so I was on the Switch a lot. I wasn't sick. I wasn't that sick, but I was laying down resting. And so I did manage to finish Metroid Dread. Took me about 15 hours, got 84% of the items. Final boss was a beast, but got through. Like, that was a game where I really felt accomplished when I finished it. That was a phenomenal game. I'm glad I finally got through it. And then I also played a little bit of Mario 3D World, right? Because I was in bed on the Switch and didn't want to be using the PlayStation controllers. So... and as far as what I've been watching, Book of Boba Fett, that League of Legends on Netflix, the name leaves me right now. And I did manage to dive back into a little bit of Boondocks. That show is still funny. And a comedy I'll recommend if you have 20 or 30 minutes to spare and you have Hulu, I would say Abbott Elementary. Mac just froze and his face looks so freaking funny. I have got to get a picture. Ah, dang it. He just unfroze.
Sorry.
He froze and looked like an old man. It was dang it, I almost got the picture. Well, chat, you're being shy this week, and that's totally cool. Mac, why don't you read what Spenis is watching and playing?
Sure. Spenis has been watching Book of Boba Fett, Next Level Chef, NFL Football, and has been playing Halo Infinite, Pokemon Legends Arceus. Is that how it's supposed to be said? I don't know, but the new Pokemon game, which seems like somebody was just like, hey, what if we had Breath of the Wild... but did Pokemon instead.
And I have a feeling it's making Mac want to switch even though he wanted to.
Never. But, well, yeah.
Cool. I'll take us home. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to episode number 215 of Two Nerds in a Pod, Nerdiest Video Game Podcast in the Galaxy. If you enjoyed what you saw today, please watch again next week. Share us with your friends. Share us with your enemies. We'll be back next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Keep it nerdy, y'all.
See ya.